You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your host and the person that uses the heat seaters. Actually, I think it's seat heaters. I never say that right. Anyway, I'm the person that uses them year round. Doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees or minus five out, I'm putting the heat seaters on. Okay, here's the thing. You can have the best product in the world, but if your customer doesn't feel connected to you, they don't buy from you. That's the reality that we live in today. And that is why I interviewed this guy, Ryan McCarty, on Inside Launch Street. He is an author, a speaker, and co-founder of Culture of Good, Inc. So building upon the success of his award-winning program at TCC Verizon, a Verizon retailer that had over 800 stores that inspires employees, ignites positive change in the world, and impacts their bottom lines, Ryan and TCC Verizon CEO Scott Moorhead created this Culture of Good to teach for-profit companies how to operate with the soul of a nonprofit. Like I said, that's important, not just for doing good in the world, but also because in today's world, everything is transparent. Customers don't want to just know your product. They want to know your story. And Ryan and I talked about everything from how to scale little moments into a movement that has lasting impact, why companies that focus on doing good increase their employee engagement, productivity, innovation, and bottom line. Basically, it helps from the inside out. Turns out, when people feel connected to a purpose, they work harder, regardless of the job. And also, as I said, consumers don't engage with a business just for the product. They want to know your story, that you're doing good in the world. One thing he said that really stuck out to me was around the fact that we don't buy transactionally, we buy relationally. And how your culture is your greatest differentiator and your greatest risk. All right, get your notepads. Let's do this. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much, Tamara. Appreciate having me.
Well, now that we're getting to know each other, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
I have personally cut my own hair since I was 12 years old. I've had one haircut and I ended up looking like Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber.
A little Lloyd Christmas.
Yeah, only one. But other than that, I have cut my own hair since I was 12 years old. So, yeah.
Okay, so here's my inappropriately rude question. Like, is that because you think it looks better that way? Are you an efficiency person? Like, how did that start?
I think both. I did a gift quest thing years ago, and my number one job selected through that kind of like skills gift quest type survey that I did was that I should have become a beautician. So there's that. And I love cutting hair. I've cut other people's hair for years, guys, just like with clippers and stuff. I just love doing it. And yeah, I'm just always, you know, I just see people's haircuts and I'm like, I could do so much better than that. So yeah, started doing it when I was 12. I grew up kind of in a camp in the summers and I would cut my own hair and I just got used to it. And once I figured out how to do it, I was like, why would I pay for this? So the efficiency and like paying for something that I could do myself, I just don't see a point in it.
I just have this vision now of sitting in front of you in a movie theater and you tapping me on the shoulder and being like, ma'am, if you actually layered the back of your hair, it would look so much better.
Exactly. I'm always judging people. I will totally judge you by your hair,
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, well, I've got a Brillo pad for hair, so you are welcome to do what you can to it. This is so far off track, but it's so interesting to me.
Yeah,
It's just so fascinating to me how people answer. It's just amazing what you learn. You know, you have this whole thing around culture of good, which really kind of layers into employee engagement. So I want to start there and talk a little bit from your perspective before we dig into what that means, but why employee engagement is so important.
Yeah, you know, I spent over two decades in nonprofit work. So I was a pastor, I did mission work, I did everything from running after school programs. My wife and I launched a whole network around that. Like I did all this work that was so meaningful and people loved doing it and they were giving their time and they were discovering their purpose and they felt called to do it. It's what I would call like soulular work. It was work that connected people on a soulular level. And they were engaged with it in such a way that they did it without a paycheck. They volunteered their time. So when I came into the for-profit sector of business, I was honestly, I came in with the perspective of doing work meant you were connected to what you were passionate about. You cared about what you did every day and you found meaning in it. And I didn't find that everywhere I turned, right? Like there was a lot of people coming to work and just doing it for a paycheck and they were disengaged with what they were doing. They, if you talk to them, they felt like it was a waste of time other than they had to do it because they had to pay bills. And I just didn't have that perspective growing up the way I did. Like it was always like giving back kind of work. I've just always done that. My parents raised me in that kind of way, you know, like working in soup kitchens and I just went into that full time at 16 years old and never looked back. So coming into the for-profit sector of business, I had an experience that most people don't have. And that was coming face to face with some realities within just everyday work where people just weren't happy. And I thought, man, you know, like how sad is that, that people will spend their life and the majority of their time doing something that they didn't feel connected to. And so, you know, I think it's more than just engagement. I think it really has to do with connecting people to their life purpose and calling. And that was always my perspective growing up. And I always felt like I had that. So when I didn't see that in others, I felt compelled to share what I knew. And that was, we can do our work, but we can also do our work with love and find a lot of meaning in it. And we can only do that if we connect it to meeting the needs of others. So it really came down to me just answering a question a lot of people are asking. And that is, how do we, for lack of a better term, how do we engage people beyond ping pong tables and love sacks in the break room and, you know, dressing casual, that kind of like surface level stuff? Like, how do we do that on a heart level, like a soul level?
I just had this vision in my head thinking back to Office Space. Remember that movie of like, so it's Hawaiian mm-hmm. Shirt Friday. At some point I'm going to start a closed Facebook group for all of us that think the ping pong tables are ridiculous. Not that you shouldn't have it. It's just that if that's your way of connection, you're missing the mark.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't think everybody, you know, that's kind of what everybody kind of terms is kind of that cultural, yeah. Like we're cool to work because we have a ping pong table in the break room.
Don't forget free beer.
And
there's a keg somewhere.
Oh yeah. Free keg Fridays. And it's all, none of that stuff is, I guess, bad. It's just, you know, it's not the type of engage, like I'm not going to spend my time and my life personally on building a legacy of I made work fun for people.
Do you think that it's, for lack of a better way to say it, do you think that we start with meaning and purpose and it gets kind of beaten out of us over time? Or is it just the nature of, you know, not doing something that's as mission driven as kind of nonprofit work? Why are we so disenchanted when we go to work yet spend so much time there?
You know, it's just we have to unlearn what work is really supposed to be about, what our life purpose is supposed to be about, and really, quite honestly, what life is about. I mean, if life is the sum of the money that you make and the stuff you buy and the things you get off of Amazon and you just live in this cyclical, like spend, earn, spend, earn, spend, earn, and that's really the sum of life, you know, that's a really sad idea, you know, and I think we need to unlearn that and realize there doesn't have to be this separation of I go to work and I volunteer on the weekends or I do work through the week or I give my time to something I really care about in the evenings. But we can actually do our work and do good at the same time. You know, and I think more and more the younger generation is expecting that. What I found, though, in that conversation is it's not just the millennials or the Gen Z that really care about that. Once you give employees the opportunity to do something meaningful with their work or at least connect their work to something that has the end result of making the world a better place or their local community or neighborhood a better place. They know their own impact, and that has a profound impact on their sense of connection to what they do every day. And because of that, their productivity increases. The results in the business is astronomical. That's been my experience, but it really comes down to really connecting the two, like profit and purpose don't have to be so separate.
I love the way you said that. Profit and purpose don't have to be separate. So I want to dig into how you build a culture of good. And I actually want to do that, if it works for you, through talking about your book, Building a Culture of Good, but through some of your chapter titles, because I found them so intriguing. I love the book, but the titles in particular, I was like, oh, that's what an interesting way to position that as how to build a culture of good. So do you mind if we go through some of those and kind of what you mean by that and how to build a culture of good and what you're talking about in that chapter?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So I wanted to start. So and
I'm
bring
glad
up,
I have a book with me.
Right? Woohoo! Hold on. Which chapter is she referring to? What did I say in that chapter?
Yeah,
what's happening?
Yeah, exactly. I better read my own book.
Right, totally right. I will say, in all fairness, once you write a book, it does all get a little muddled in your head because you put so much thought on paper. So in fairness. So I wanted to actually start with chapter 4, connecting moments into a movement. That was super intriguing to me when I opened that chapter. So talk about that, what that means, and how you do that.
Yeah, sure. You know, that's something that we learned really early on, because when I got my business partner, Scott Moorhead, when I was hired on, he and still is the CEO of one of the largest Verizon retailers in the country. So right now he has over 3,000 employees. I think 800 stores. I had to scale up what I had learned to do in the church and doing mission work and like caring for the community. My wife and I, as an example of that, scaling up to his level of employees and company. My wife and I had done a backpack giveaway for about a decade before I met Scott and before he hired me into his company. And we started with 25 backpacks the first year. Over 10 years, we built it to like 1,000 backpacks with school supplies. We were giving back to kids and families were showing up, and there was these emotional moments and moms were crying. And, you know, it was like really a tangible way to say to our community, like, we care, we want to meet a tangible need. When I got hired into Scott's company, TCC, we knew immediately we had to have a moment. We had to create an emotional disruption like what I had done in the nonprofit work for his employees so they could come to work and connect their why with their what. Their why would equal their what. And so we scaled up that backpack giveaway, and within a few months, we scheduled a 60,000 backpack giveaway with school supplies across 35 states. At that point, he had over 2,000 employees. That's a long story on what it took for me to learn what it meant to actually scale from 1,000 backpacks to 60,000 filled with school supplies across 35 states. I had never done anything like this before. And we just went for it. And, you know, that moment in his business was so significant. We had countless emails from employees, from managers saying, we can't tell you how thankful we are that we work for this company. You know, that was a moment. That was the most significant moment in my work career. I mean, it was wild. It was so profoundly impactful to the employees that Scott and I just met like a few days after that large event. It was a one day, where all the employees collectively gave back 60,000 backpacks with school supplies. And Scott's reply, because of that much impact on his employees' lives and their work experience, his reply to all of that to me was, how can we do this again next weekend? And we realized really early on, I told him, you know, like, that's impossible. That's not going to happen. I think sometimes CEOs have this idea that, you know, anything can happen if they just kind of snap their fingers.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
But logistically, it was a lot. Yeah, exactly. Kind of the Steve Jobs idea, you know, like we need this done in 2 weeks. But really, you know, for us, we realized early on, like, that was a moment But if this was going to be sustainable and impactful on the employee journey and their experience and have the sustainability and the growth that we wanted to have, we needed to systematically have a plan around how to turn that moment into a movement. So rather than it being a one-off event that a lot of companies and organizations will go out and they'll do a march or they'll give back in a certain way, or they'll collect cans, or they'll go out and plant some trees. All that stuff is good, but it doesn't have any type of movement to it. And so we had to turn that moment into a movement, create an entire strategy around giving back and doing good, connecting employees through that on several different levels. One of them we called Big Good. The second tier we called Our Good. And the third tier we called My Good. So we turned a moment into a movement by everyone collectively doing good on a quarterly basis together, all 2,000 to 3,000 employees. That was the Big Good events that we had. And then we had Our Good, where we gave autonomy to each one of the stores and departments and gave them the resource to choose what they were most passionate about. And that was Our Good. And then My Good was giving the employees pay time off individually to go out into their community locally. All this was very hyper-local because that's where his stores are located, and give back their time, what they were most passionate about. So it spoke to every individual employee, gave them a connection to their passion, their team's passion, and then the organization's passion. When we had that strategy going, there was a predictable cadence of giving back. And because of that, the moment became a movement. And it just grew and grew and grew to what we see today, where now over the last 5 years, we've given away over 700,000 backpacks with school supplies. We've got events happening consistently all year long. And now that's beginning to spread into other companies and businesses. And that's where the culture of good now is not just a movement within his business, but now has become its own business.
And I'm going to venture to say, right, that the employee engagement of those stores has gone up, which probably in turn means sales have gone up, customer service feedback form, scales have gone up, like everything has been impacted because of this.
Same store sales is up 40% since the launch of Culture of Good. And I can't honestly say on this podcast that the only reason same store sales went up 40% was because of the culture of good. But because of the employees' engagement, there's a different level of coming to work to sell a wireless phone than there is to know that if I sell that next phone or if I drive the business toward greater success, we can do more good. So a big part of the culture of good isn't just let's go out and do some good and let's be philanthropic. But how do we teach employees that their everyday work impacts the success of the business, and they actually care about that, not because they're making the business more money, but because the business can do more good year over year. That's a whole different conversation. That's why, culture of good is not like another CSR program or, corporate social responsibility it's not a program. It's not like, here's your business, and by the way, tack on this like philanthropic stuff, and add this to your website. No, we're saying build your entire culture around teaching your employees how to care about people in the world around them, but also how to drive the business toward greater success so that the business can continue to do greater good year over year. And that's an entirely different conversation.
What a wonderful challenge to put out to launch treaters out there and to leaders out there about really thinking about if you have a culture of good or if you just have those, one day off things that happen once every 6 months. What you were saying reminded me of when I was in my 20s, I'm in my 40s now, but when I was working in advertising, one day a year, we got to go work at, I think we got to pick from three programs. One of them I know is Habitat for Humanity, because that's the one I always did. But I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I did it because it was a day off from work and I lollygagged my way around. And it's horrible, right? Like I'm a horrible person. I know. I get it. But, I wasn't connected to it. It was just like, okay, September 1st of every year, we all leave the office to do something and then come back. But there was no connection to the, there was no connection. I didn't feel connected to it. And I'm not totally blaming them. I was also young and selfish, so it's on me too. But there's a big difference, right, to what you're saying about like, here's my once every 6 month program versus here's something that we really believe in, and here's something that we believe in being connected to.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the responsibility of a company to say, why are we in business? And number two, why do you want to work for us? And why do you want to do business with us? It really comes down, it has to be greater. And I think more and more we're seeing studies that people aren't engaging with businesses just because of product anymore. Yeah. Like you can get a cell phone anywhere. You can buy, you know, you can buy your like organic food at any grocery store. You can buy pizza anywhere. Have you heard of the pizza shop in Philadelphia, Roses, where they, if you go in and buy, if you give an extra dollar, they put a post-it note on the wall and you can put a little message. And if a homeless person comes in anytime during the day, they can grab one of the post-it notes and get a free piece of pizza.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You know, I bring them up because I don't want to bring up any other pizza shop, right?
Yeah.
I bring up Roses because they're doing something that I give a shit about, homeless people. You know what I mean? Like the reason that we go and do things in life is because we know why we do them. And companies aren't giving employees a why. We have job fairs, we have career fairs, we don't have calling fairs, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Companies feel ill-equipped to like provide their employees with a calling. But that's what I did for 20 years. So when I came into, again, when I came into just what I would call just regular business, it was like, why do nonprofits start with all this purpose and all this, like, here's why we do what we do every day, but we many times don't know how to run a business. But then over on the other side, you have for-profits that know how to run a business and be successful and make money and profit. But eventually they're like, we don't really, you know, we don't know what our purpose is. And, you know, we might have some values written on the wall in the break room, but it's wallpaper. Nobody remembers what they are. Nobody cares. We go and do an event once a year, or the CEO, you know, puffs his head up by writing a big check, you know, and handing it without any connection to the employees. And we love giving checks to charities, but we're like, and Scott's done that before. We've done that through Culture of Good. But the question is like, you know, is that just like a quick check given to a charity, or how are the employees paying for that check? Like, how do the employees know their connection to that gift? Like, are you collectively doing that? And do they know why it matters? And do they know the impact? You know, we encourage companies through our process and system, like discover a cause that aligns with the strategic intent of your business, but also aligns with the passions of your employees and customers. And when you find that, I mean, it's magic.
So let's go to the chapter, because I think this is a great transition, what you're saying, to chapter 6 and 7. And I'll just say them both, because I felt like as I was reading it too, that one kind of led into the other, but the second one surprised me. So chapter 6 is making employees better. And then I was surprised when I got to chapter 7, making customers better. Because I think sometimes, like, it's funny to me. I mean, I've been in business, in the business world for a long time now. We're either very employee-driven or we're very customer-driven, but we don't really think about our customers as part of us. Like, there's a wall between us and our customers. Mm-hmm. So when I got to that chapter, I was like, what?
Yeah.
So talk about those.
Right, yeah. Because, well, you know, the question that you're asking is the customer engagement transactional or relational? You know, customers are looking for experience. They're not just looking for product. And by customer, I'm not talking about, we're all customers, right?
Yeah, like right.
We all are customers of something. And I want to know personally, Ryan, I want to know that who I'm buying my products from, that they're a good citizen in the world, that they care about the environment, that they, you know, that they care about the stuff I care about, that there's a shared value there. And if as a business, they're not connecting with me, I tend to feel like I'm just a financial transaction, that I'm just coming in there to spend money. But when they're willing to sit and listen and talk and be a part of a greater conversation and treat me as a human being and actually show that they care. You know, it's a whole different level of engagement with the customer when you just are willing to listen and to care about that person, and to hear their story and to be a part of feeling like what you're talking about, that there's less of a gap between the business and the customer experience, that, you know, collectively we could say to the customer, don't just come do business with us and we'll spend your money on doing good, but come do business with us. And, oh, by the way, we have this opportunity for you to come do good with us too, because we're giving back backpacks, or we're going over here and we're going to the nursing home. Come serve with us. Come volunteer with us. Like, be a part of this. And, you know, there's nothing greater in a person's life than to go and serve with someone. Like, when you're serving with people, when you're serving with your peers, you're making employees better because you're making your team better. You know, you're not just going out and shooting each other with paintball guns for team building. You're actually going out and doing good together, and it's emotional and there's a connection to that. Give that same opportunity to the customer. They'll be a customer for life, not because your price is better than everybody else or your product is better, or, you know, it is. I teach business owners this all the time. Your culture is your single most differentiator in business and your greatest risk. It's your greatest differentiator and your greatest risk, culture.
How so?
You know, and culture, well, because it's a differentiator, because it's the only thing that tells your customer not only what you offer in terms of service and in terms of product, but who you are. It tells your story. Right. Your culture tells
your
story.
Which is vulnerable, to put
that
out there.
That's why. Yeah, it's very vulnerable, and it shows your heart, right? That's that vulnerability that it takes to really, you know, to be a differentiator. It's the greatest risk, because regardless of what, you know, somebody's going to sell the same products you sell. Everybody tries to say that their customer service is the best in the industry. If everybody's customer service is the best, then nobody's is.
Right. Like, good point. So
it's not a differentiator anymore. The only thing you have to tell, and this is for you as well, and for myself, and for every business out there and business owner, the only thing we have that's different and unique is our story.
Yeah.
That's it. And telling that story in a moving, emotionally disruptive, connective way to your employees and your customers, and quite frankly, to the world, that's your single most greatest differentiator. And that's why I say it's your greatest risk as well. Because if you have a bad culture, it not only affects the relationship that you have with your employees, but it in turn will affect the relationship you have with your customers. You see it every day in the news, right? You've got Facebook going on right now. You've got issues in culture with sexual harassment. That's a deep-seated issue. It's a huge risk, obviously huge risk. There's issues with the airlines, with the small dog that, you know, there's all this like connect. Once your culture starts to fall apart, your business, your revenue is impacted greatly. It's your greatest risk, but it's also your greatest differentiator. If you can tell a compelling story of not only what you do in business, but why you are as a company, that is able to drive the revenue within your business, and so you can do greater good in the world.
You know, I'll tell you just really quickly, and then I have a question for you on the differentiator. I talk a lot in innovation that better, the ER trap actually is what I call it, like the trap. We try to be better, stronger, faster, quicker, right? Like, you know, smoother. So we try to make our product a little bit better, maybe our customer service a little bit better. The problem is it really is a never ending wheel, because if I'm a little bit better, then you can be a little bit better than me. And now I'm trying to catch up to you, and then you're trying to catch up to me. Kind of to your point about differentiator, it's really hard in today's marketplace, and having a product that's slightly better, or customer service, to your point, that's slightly better, or employees that are slightly nicer, is really not enough. You know, you have to be different.
Ends.
No, it
You're
never
right.
ends. It just, you You're, have to be different. Yeah. It's the ER trap. And, you know, I'm all for improvement. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think a lot of little improvements can lead to a big differentiator. But to kind of put the stake in the ground around anything that ends in ER, I think is a problem. I want to loop over, though, to what you said. You used the language a couple times now, and I'd love to hear you talk about what it means to do that. And that's to be emotionally disruptive. I've never heard that phrase before. So can you dig into what that means?
I walked into a school to give back to some teachers, and the principal looked at me and said, "You know what's unique about you?" I said, "What?" They said, you're disruptive. And I've heard that before as a kid growing up in school.
I would know nothing about that, Ryan. Nothing.
I had a disruption in my own life when I was a 6-year-old little dude. My dad was a heroin addict. My mom was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, and very sad, disruptive moment in my own life where my mom, when I was in school, committed suicide as a result of depression and schizophrenia you know, you look back over your life and you realize like there are disruptive moments in every one of our lives.
Yeah.
And we don't choose those. But I had a teacher when I was during that time, and I had totally forgotten about her. And I wouldn't have even known that she was a part of my life until 30 years later. She came up to me and she said, with a question look on her face, she said, "Are you Ryan?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Are you Ryan McCarty?" I said, "Yeah." She said, and tears are streaming down her face. And I usually don't have that much of an impact on someone.
Right away, at least.
So apparently I'd met her for the second time. She said, "I'm Mrs. Overly. I was your teacher when your mom committed suicide. You were a student in my class." She said, when I would come to class every morning, I knew there was going to be a moment you would start crying in the class and disrupt the class. So I would walk in with a towel on my shoulder and leave it there so that when you would start crying," she said, "teachers can't do this anymore." I'd walk over, I'd pick you up, and I'd let you cry on my shoulder through the class.
Yeah.
And she said, isn't that beautiful? She said, when it came time for your mom's funeral, she said, they didn't know what to do with you. You were running around the funeral home. She said, "I just want you to know that they called me," and she said three words to me that have always, since that moment, really stood out to me. And she said, "I just want you to know I was there. I was there." Uh-huh. That was my disruption. That was my emotional disruption that I didn't choose, but Mrs. Overly chose to be emotionally disrupted because she cared that much. You know, there's a huge difference, and she didn't have to. She was a teacher, but she wasn't just a teacher. And I think that's what I'm asking employees, your listeners, I'm asking business owners. Like, you can tell me what you do, but that's not just who you are. Like, you're more than that, right? And you know, I all the time talk to companies where, you know, they have employees that collect cans for the homeless and they deliver the food to a food bank and then they leave. And there's no emotional connection to anything because there's not a connection to anyone. And what I would suggest is don't just collect cans of food for the hungry. Go down to your local soup kitchen and have lunch.
Yeah, like, get to know them.
Eat with the homeless. Get to know people. Hear their story. Like, the emotional disruption idea has hit me over and over and over again. It's what you didn't experience going to help at the Habitat for Humanity. Nothing wrong with that charity.
No, they're a wonderful charity. It wasn't them. It was how it was set up.
Well, absolutely. You know, and so I would say, you know, knowing how you're giving back and doing good, who who are you impacting the most, and getting to know their story and sitting down with them and listening and just taking time with each other. You know, we pass people in hallways and we just say, hey, how you doing? We say, hi, good. And we move on. And we really don't take time to listen and to learn and to grow. And that's that emotional disruption. Like I encourage people all the time, be more like Mrs. Overly, like say with your life, I was there. And the only way we can say I was there is to say every day I'm here. Like I'm present, I'm listening. You matter to me enough where I'm going to stop what I'm doing, even though I've got deadlines and you know, all this stuff I have to get done at work or whatever it is. I'm here to listen. Like I really care that much. Like that's that emotional disruption part. That's huge.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing your story and Mrs. Overly's story, because that's so powerful. And I will just tell you that, just to share some recent experience, I recently decided that I would, let me back up. I decided that this year I really wanted to find a cause for my business, Launch Street, to be connected to. But we didn't have that. Like I do little things here and there. And to your point, I take my kids to drop off stuff at Goodwill, but like there's no connection there. Sure. It's just a way for us to get rid of stuff at the end of the day.
That's
and
it.
Yeah, yep. I mean, in all yep. fair, and I love Goodwill too. I shop there too to support it. But the process doesn't serve what you're talking about with that emotional disruption that really makes such an impact that you wake up every day excited to do what you do, go to work, be who you are, like all of that stuff that comes to, you know, is bringing your whole self really to your life, which a lot of that is work.
Yeah.
So, so I'm big into CrossFit, and I found this incredible nonprofit called Steve's Club, and Steve's Club teaches CrossFit to at-risk and underserved youth. And while that sounds like just just an exercise program, if you aren't really aware of how CrossFit works, what it's really doing is investing time to teach these kids to show them they're worth it through teaching them resilience and the power of hard work and being able to change their story and their cycles. And what I found, I love it. I was so excited when I found it. So I personally started volunteering in the middle of the week for two separate groups. So it's 2 hours of my time with drive time. It's all it takes.
Yeah.
But what's been absolutely amazing about it for me personally, and then it ladders into the business, is the fulfillment I get from the connection. To your point, it's a very hyper-localized connection. There are 30 kids that I am super involved with. And I know their names and I'm starting to understand their stories. It's only been a couple months. So for some of them, because of their situations, it takes them a while to trust a new person, which I understand.
Right.
And they're all incredible. So, and that has become that cause has become the business cause and a way for all of us to give back. And the result of that has been so high impact. But to your point, it had to take that emotional disruption, which is beyond delivering stuff at a nonprofit. It was really more of how do I get involved in a way that feeds my soul in giving back? I mean, it's really selfish in some ways because I feel so good coming out of it, you know?
yeah. You know, I want to stop for a second and say thank you for sharing that, because a lot of times what I'm finding, and we teach with the culture of good, like share. Like you should never do good to be seen, but you should always be seen doing good, right? Like when you go out and do good, you need to let the world know that you're doing that, because good is contagious and it's inspirational and other people get involved. And I hear all the time, like people say, well, I don't want to brag about the good I'm doing, or, you know, businesses say we just do this and we write checks and we don't share it with anyone. And what a missed opportunity. You know, I like to say when you've got the sickness of on everybody, you know, like get everybody infected with goodness, you know, just tell everybody about it. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're saying. You know, we had an employee, one company that we were working with, they were going to go into nursing homes. And he was like, I don't want to go into the nursing home. Like, I feel uncomfortable with this. And he had some of his peers, and colleagues kind of put some pressure on him, a little peer pressure to go in with them to the nursing home. And so they go in there. He ends up sitting next to this elderly gentleman who's fought in some wars. And he just, you know, this gentleman tells this employee, like, I don't have anyone to come in to visit. And I just want to say thank you for taking your time to come in, because it really made my day. Mm. And that employee decided to adopt that elderly gentleman as his grandpa. Aww. And now goes in like all the time.
That's wonderful.
You know, it's kind of like we need our soul to wake up. We need that spark. We need that emotional. We need to feel something. Like, people, employees are human.
Yeah.
And we have feelings, and we need to feel something to believe in it. And that's what that emotional connection does. Like, it reminds us that if it weren't for, you know, other circumstances, we'd be in the same place, you know, like there's, you know, we need someone. Like, I'm reminded that I was that 6-year-old little kid that needed a teacher, you know?
Yeah.
I needed that. I needed someone willing enough to say, count me in. I'll be disrupted. I'll let my life be interrupted. And because of that, like, now I want to be that same type of person for other kids. And that's, you know, that's where you discover your life purpose, from your own pain sometimes.
Well, this is, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I believe so strongly in what you're saying, and the idea, and you've created a business out of this, but the idea that you can help a business incorporate this into their bottom line just makes it, I mean, I don't want to say that everything comes back to money, but it does in many ways for business. But the idea that you can connect the two and not make them fight each other, I think is so great. And for business owners out there and team leaders out there, I'd say, you know, I would say, and I'm sure, Ryan, that you have the same experience. I spend, you know, let's call it 3 hours during my work week working with Steve's Club. Yep. And I am way more engaged, productive, in it, creative. Like, all of the stuff I'm trying to accomplish on a daily basis happens when I feed my soul, because that then comes back right to everything else. So they're so not mutually exclusive. And to what you said, I think in the beginning, we treat good as something we do in the evenings on the weekends, when it should be a part of all of it.
Yeah. You know, I get to keynote quite a bit and speak at different conferences, and I always joke with, if there's business owners or CEOs I'm speaking with, executive teams, I'm like, okay, I get it. We're in business to make money. Okay. That's why you go into business. You're passionate about making money, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, profit is not evil, but profit can be an amazing catalyst for doing good.
Yeah.
So your passion can be profit and purpose. Like, that's what we were talking about earlier, to kind of come full circle. Like, profit and purpose don't have to be exclusive. They can work together in synergy. But I said, what's unique about the purpose side than the profit side is, you can't on the side of your building advertise, our greatest passion is making a shit ton of money. Like, if that's your right. tagline, like, right. totally disengaging to the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you just, that's, okay, fine. We all get it. You're in business to make money. But if you want to share your story in a compelling way, and differentiate yourself in the world, and you actually really do care, like, you have to be authentic with this too. Like, we have businesses that we just won't work with, because you talk to the owners and you're like, okay, there's zero desire to do anything in the world.
And those are,
yeah, exactly. And we'll skip over those and engage, but most people that we interact with and engage with, I mean, you know, if you just talk to them a little bit, they're passionate about something beyond profit. And once you discover that purpose, that's what you share. That's what you share with the customer. Now, your profit side and your purpose side is what you share with your employee. So that internal marketing is, how are we caring about people in the world around us? And then, how are we driving the business toward greater success? You share both the profit and the purpose with your employees, but to the customer, you share the purpose. And that's deeper than cause marketing. That's deeper than just trying to get a press release. That's we're doing this because we authentically and genuinely care about something greater than ourselves. And that again, is the differentiator.
You know, I love it. This has been such a fascinating conversation to me. And I will leave you with this. I've got one last question for you, but I will leave you this quote too, that I was sharing this with somebody else the other day. I don't know who said it. I don't know where it came from. Maybe you know, but it rocked my world about how I think about my business and purpose and profit together. And the quote is, it takes profit to make change. And I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly how I try to think about business is, okay, I am in it for profit and for money, but because I need that to make the change I want to make in the world. So you can't really have one without the other.
Yep.
Before I ask you the last question, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Yeah, cultureofgood.com.
Awesome.
Is the best answer to that. You can find the book, Build a Culture of Good, on cultureofgood.com. You can find it on Amazon. It's a good kind of first step to learn the story. And thank you, by the way, for sharing some of those ideas and concepts out of the book. But yeah, cultureofgood.com is the kind of the space where they can reach out to us through that. We're on all the social media stuff. Culture Good is. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. And so they can find me, Ryan McCarty, on all of that. But yeah, we'd love any listeners that would love to learn more. And again, I'm a student, so I reach out to people all the time to learn from what other people are doing. I'm fascinated by the amount of good that's happening in the world right now through for-profit businesses and the impact that that's having on the world. It's tremendous. So first, thank you for sharing our story, and thank you to all your listeners that are out there making the world a better place. It's an honor to know that there's more good happening in the world than we're aware of.
Well, I love your idea of sharing it, because I used to think of that as being too braggy. I'd be like, well, I don't want to share that I'm doing good. Like, it's just something I do on the side. Yeah. But I love your idea that it's contagious. So I'm going to just really own that in our business too. My last question for you is, what's the one piece of advice you have for launch leaders out there looking to create a culture of good in their organizations? And I think actually to rein that question in, where should they begin?
Buy our book. You know, sit with your employees and your customers and listen and hear their passion. Ask them what they're passionate about.
Great place.
And then just listen and treat your employees and customers like humans and hear what their passions are, and then find ways to align those passions with a cause that aligns with the business, and you're as close as you're ever going to be to launching a culture of good and really engaging people on a soul level at that point and driving results in your business, which again, we all want that. So The more good we do, I believe, the more impact we can have on our business and our bottom line, which in turn creates that circle that we can do greater good. So start by listening to your employees and customers' passions.
Love it. Ryan, thank you so much for coming by. This has really been a fantastic conversation, and I would love to challenge launch readers out there to really think about how they're creating a culture of good.
Thanks, Tamara. I appreciate the opportunity. Keep rocking it.
Wow, right? Wasn't that interesting? Here's what I want you to think about. In your work, are you being transactional or relational? Are you just doing an exchange of a product or service for money? And by the way, that applies internally for how you interact with your colleagues and coworkers, as well as to your customers. Or are you building relationships? By the way, it's hard to innovate when you play in the transactional space. That's part of the reason why I thought this was so important to all of you out there, launch readers. You can't innovate if you're being transactional. Now, you know I won't leave you hanging, right? So we have a ton of videos on customer innovation. So here's what I want you to do. Go to Launch Street, GOTO launchstreet.com, and click on Innovation 101 up in the navigation bar and check out all the innovation vlogs and blogs we've put together to help you ignite innovation, to create that culture of innovation. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.